My name is Stacy, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kareth and Giroux, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and/or understanding. Mike will read the preamble.
Thank you. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Sally will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Sally. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps. Step 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, saw through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Kareth will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is Kareth, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public Controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Rich G.
Hi, my name is Rich, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank Eddie very, very much for the privilege to speak here at my home group. I want to give you a little background on me. I got sober July 6th, 2006. My sponsor is Stacy. I've worked the steps, and I've got, I sponsor some fellas. The most important thing I think I can do tonight is to welcome all the people here who may be here for the first time, people who are counting days. You help me a lot. I know you help a lot of other people here a lot, and so welcome very much. Glad that you're here. I was told to speak from the heart. I never knew what that meant, but I'm going to try. I was born here, but I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., the mean streets of the suburbs of Arlington, Virginia. It was a very nice life. It was a very nice life. And I had everything I could possibly want. I think I was probably a little more sensitive than the average kid, but for the most part, I was just like, it was all good. I had my first drink when I was 13. I think my dad used to drink Ballantine Ale. I liked the caps. They had little games on the back of them. I thought that was kind of fun. But I didn't start to seriously drink until I was 13. And that's actually true. My family was great, but when I was 11, my parents got divorced. My mom went through a rough time, and that was just not okay for me. And I remember my first burning resentment was that. And for some reason, I remember being very ashamed of it. Like somehow they let us down. And I took it personally. And I remember being very frightened by that. And the drinking started pretty much right after that. I got through high school. Beer was my thing. I was a little guy. But I could drink a lot. And for me, that was a big part of like being a man, because I wasn't a big guy. I didn't play football, but I could drink, and I took a abnormal pride in that, and it made me more relaxed, and I could talk to girls, and that was that. My drinking really didn't get out of hand in a big way until I got to be I graduated college, I just thought if I could do well in school, if I could just achieve, if I could just have the right girl, I was that guy trying to feel okay. And what happened to me is I went to law school and I couldn't do it, and I left, I just couldn't do it. And I felt like my life was over. And I remember shortly thereafter, the drinking kind of just shifted. And I started to drink a lot, and I got my first DUI, and then I had two or three more by the time I was, I 28 years old. And I went to my first AA meeting back then because I had to. And it was, it was that coffee pot and five old men, and I was like, yeah, whatever. And so what I want to say is a big part of my story is when the going gets tough, I get going, and I can tell you that I've lived in more cities and more apartments and houses in those cities. I'm going to brag about it now, like more than any of you. We can compare later, but It was extraordinary. If something wasn't working out, I would move. I had a boss that said I had the residential patterns of a serial killer. And it was a joke, but, you know, it's funny. I didn't take it as a joke. I knew there was something wrong. You know what I mean? There's something wrong. So what happened to me is, part of that move was I moved to Los Angeles. I thought it would be better there. I couldn't stay in D.C. and not be a lawyer, right? That was impossible. So what happened was I went out to L.A., and it was perfect for me because that's a town that I could relate to. And I lived there 13 years, so forgive me, I don't mean to pick on L.A., but it was a great place for someone who was very immature, me, who didn't want to really take responsibility for my actions or the things I had done. And this is the part where I'm supposed to get sober now, but I can tell you that until I came to AA, the only time I ever could turn off that really awful negative voice in my head, the voice that my sponsor calls Rufus, is when I was so hungover, and I used to actually, toward the end of my drinking, would like being hungover, because it was that sort of perfect balance of being, you know, so much the throbbing that I couldn't hear the voice, and that was kind of nice. What happened to me is I moved one more time. I moved to New York City. I thought it would be better. And what happened was within 90 days, it got so bad that I basically ended up here. And how I ended up here was I hit a low, I hit a depression, I hit a bottom. And I look back now, and I know that was a gift. At the time, I wanted to die and didn't really have the capacity to sort of take my life. So instead, I just stewed in it. And when that didn't work anymore, the pain was so severe, I sought help. And that was the first sort of, you know, God moment. And, when I came in here, this idea of God was, I didn't know what to do with it. But what I did know was that I needed help. And so when I came here and my first time to this meeting, I had about 40 days and I had been, it was suggested to come here by someone, a member of this group. And when I came here, things began to turn around. And I did nothing to turn things around. I simply, took direction. And I think that's really an important point for my story because my thinking is so bad. I mean, even today, you know, I still have this disease. I have 3.5 years sobriety, all that stuff. I'm gainfully employed. I didn't work for almost 2 years between coming in and being 9 months sober. But I know for me, learning how to take direction and working the steps, and it's important, obviously, to talk about working the steps and the other pieces of the triangle that make up, you know, AA is explained to me, is that, I prayed for something I didn't even want to have, which is willingness. Pain was the great instigator for me of getting into this program. And I know for anyone else here who may be struggling with these things, all I can tell you is, for me, that's what got me going. I think the book talks about it being the touchstone, certainly of my spirituality. I had to just be in pain. And now, as I said, we read before before the meeting, is that, you know, the best I can say about, you know, my program today is I'm not willing to be in pain nearly as long as I was when I was out there. You know, like, I still need that pain to get moving, but it's not as bad. And, you know, I just want you guys to know that for me, you know, wherever you are in this program, you know, I wish you well. I know for me, you know, I go to meetings pretty much every day. I sponsor a bunch of guys. I finally started doing 10 steps when the pain got so bad. And my sponsor said if I couldn't hear him, maybe I should talk to somebody else, you know. So I needed that kick, and I got there, you know. And what is starting to happen for me, and I mean just a little bit, is I'm getting some real humility. And if you knew me, or if you know me, you know that that's not, that ain't easy. And, I mean, don't you know who I am? But I can tell you that, you know, Peggy once said to me, we all come in, I'm paraphrasing Peggy, sorry, we all come in rock stars, and we all walk out of here if we stick around, you know, kind of humble servants. And, I got the 1 minute sign. I was told, you know, can I maybe tell you some of the things I do? I think I touched on it. I pretty much, if someone asks me to do something in AA, I pretty much do it. I have a lot of defects of character. If you guys start working the steps, or if you already have, you know this. Step 6 and 7, I got to ask for those defects to be taken away, and I try to do that. I talk to people all the time about that. I hold on to a lot of them, you know. But I think the most important thing I can say to anybody who's suffering right now, because, you know, it's not easy all the time, right? I mean, I've got loads of these defects, and I suffer in sobriety, right, this whole emotional sobriety, and that's kind of what I'm shooting for these days, is I need to learn how to ask for help. And so if anybody here is struggling, you know, if there's one piece of advice I can give you. It's okay. You know, we're all in the same boat here. And like I said earlier, it's just a real privilege to be here. Thank you very, very much for my sobriety.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Greta.
Hi, I'm Greta, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Joan, for asking me to speak. Joan was my first sponsor, and thank you very much. I guess I started drinking when I was around 14 years old, and I drank pretty much on a daily basis as a teenager. At that time, for a long time, I just remember feeling really insecure and sad. God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to talk about this. My household that I grew up in was pretty abusive, and there was just a lot of screaming and yelling and, you know, stuff I didn't know how to deal with, like, you know, not to make myself special because I went through this stuff, but just, for example, like one day, like my dad thought that, well, I was probably like 12 or 13, and my dad thought that I didn't screw the salad dressing onto the top of the salad dressing container. And he, like, got really mad, and he drove me, like, miles away from my house and dropped me off to just walk home by myself. And it was just, like, chaos all the time. I never knew when somebody was going to explode or not explode. Alcohol just happened to be the thing that I did. So I drank a lot. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 16. They didn't want me to live there anymore, largely as a result of my drinking. I continued to just kind of go on in life and drink a lot and, you know, made a lot of mistakes. So sort of before I came into AA, I was about 30 years old. You know, when I drank, I would black out sometimes and just, you know, wouldn't remember who I was with or, you know, what people were telling me. I drank during the days sometimes when I shouldn't. And I kind of like I would say, okay, I'm not going to drink at this occasion. And then I, you know, I would drink anyway. And I guess, in general, I just felt like I couldn't accomplish the things that I wanted to anymore. I couldn't concentrate. My self-esteem was just so low. I, you know, didn't want to be friends with anybody. If I saw somebody that I knew walking down the street, I would walk to the other side. I never wanted anybody to see me. You know, my eating was out of control. I was overweight. I had, like, a rash all over my body, like, from stress. And so stopping drinking was just something, you know, I wanted to do when I was about that age. And I came into the program. I have been in the program for about a year now. And I definitely, like, all those emotional problems that I've had my whole life ever since I was a kid, like, you know, stuff just doesn't really bother me anymore like it used to. So, you know, I feel, you know, I have some peace of mind, you know, now and again. I feel pretty peaceful, good. I feel pretty confident. I'm kind of like in reality. And, you know, I touched on, you know, just some of the emotional problems that I had growing up. And just because I felt like some of you might be able to relate to it, but, you know, at this point, I don't feel like I'm special or had a really hard life like I thought before. You know, we all have challenges. And so I talked to my sponsor before speaking just about a couple of things that I wanted to also touch on. And one was the idea of what is alcoholism? You know, what is our problem? Is it the alcohol? And, you know, yes, we have an allergy to alcohol, but alcohol is a symptom of our disease. And our disease centers in our minds. And what's the problem with our minds? It says on page 62 in the big book, it says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So this is the thing that, you know, we have trouble with as alcoholics, and the thing that we need to work so hard to have the peace and serenity that we deserve, that everybody deserves. One thing that I do every night and read to turn over to my sponsor is my 10th step, where, you know, I address where I was resentful and what my part was in that resentment. And I also look at where I was fearful and, you know, selfish and not in the flow of life and doing things for others. And when I do this 10th step in these spot check inventories, I do realize that, you know, all of the challenges that I have are really in my control. And it's not my job in life to get attention from others or have people think about me in a certain way or react to me in a certain way. It's just getting up in the morning and thinking about, you know, how can I make my colleague smile today? Or, you know, how can I make my boyfriend, you know, smile or be happy? And it's pretty much as simple as that. But, you know, just to have that serenity and all that emotional stability is, you know, it does take a lot of work. I do a written 10th step every night. Like, I write it out in writing like the big book says. And then in the morning, even though it's a pain in the butt, I get up early and I do 10 minutes of meditation and I think through my day and I think about my resentments, because resentment is the number one offender to alcoholics. And it also says this on page 64, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. So because I'm an alcoholic, I have resentments all the time. I don't even know why I'm resentful at, like, an entire group of people, you know, like, pretty much all the time. And I have to work so hard at it. So, you know, getting up in the morning and thinking about it for 10 minutes and just, you know, what is one thing I can say to this harmless guy who never did anything wrong to me to just make him feel comfortable, you know, and make him feel a little bit special. And, you know, think about you know, I'm thinking in my mind right now about somebody at work, and, you know, my sponsor mentioned, I have a resentment towards him. Again, he never did anything to me. I just don't like him. And my sponsor, you know, she said, you're not thinking of this guy as being a young analyst, fresh out of college, never had a job before, very scared, probably has a family, may have his own issues that he's working on, may have his own program. You're just thinking about what can this guy do for you? And she's so right. And so so I just got to think, you know, what can I do for him? What may his problems be? You know, who, you know, I'm so selfish, just like the book says. I am. And the other thing that I loved, I get so much guidance from my sponsor now, Rebecca, you know, that we talked about before, was just the concept of, you know, being powerless. And we were powerless over alcohol. And then we put down the alcohol, and part of the disease that's in the mind is we're powerless over, you know, a lot of different things. You know, I'm powerless over this resentment. I'm powerless over, you know, eating hard candy when I shouldn't. So, so what do we need to fill this fact that we're powerless? We need a power, and that power is God. And, you know, we're seeking God, and we're here to seek God to give us the power to take these things that we're powerless over, and we're here to help others. And thank you for letting me speak.
Our main speaker tonight is Rogan.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Rogan. I'm a recovered alcoholic. We're not a glum lot here. I can tell you that. The energy is crystal clear. Everybody who stood up and raised their hand counting days, congratulations. I've been there too. And that was awe-inspiring for me. I was blown away, especially how many of you. I'd like to first thank God for my sobriety. It goes right there first off. I'd like to thank AA for the pathway to recovery. It goes right there second. And in there goes the three sides of the triangle. I mean, let's just jump right in, right? We got unity, we got service, and we got recovery. And how does all that work? How does that all get put together for a guy like me? It's real simple. I come in here, and I got to walk around early on, and there was a lot of unity going on. I mean, look at the numbers, Mike. This is like the biggest meeting I've ever spoken in front of in my whole life. And I've been sober, by the grace of God, since October 17th, 1990. And this is amazing. I mean, this is amazing. You know? I'm an alcoholic. I'm not supposed to be cheering and yelling and screaming and having this joyous event over one day of recovery, but I am with you, and you guys are just inspirational. You got service going on over there, going through the 12 spiritual principles. While I'm walking around, we got fellowship, unity, over in the coffee room. A whole room, by the way, for coffee. Okay? More cookies than I could imagine at the grocery store. I was floored. I didn't have one because I got a little freaked out by how many cookies there were. I really did. And how many coffee containers going on. And I don't drink coffee, but I was really impressed. Then I went down the stairs to check out the facilities. And on my way, there was more unity and service. And what was happening in the unity and the service was, again, those 12-step principles laid out at our feet through this beautiful book were happening. People were carrying the message. Carrying the message. I was watching people's heads go, yeah. I was watching some other people's go, I'm never doing that. I'm never doing that. This one person, I'm sorry, whoever you are, you will do it. I did. You know? I mean, that's all happening, and the meeting hasn't even started yet. Okay? That is awesome. Awesome. So if I'm sitting up here and I'm all fired up because I really am and I haven't even gotten started yet, I'm really trying to control myself so that you guys hear what I'm trying to say, because I, of course, want to sound okay here, you know, but I was blown away. I'm still blown away. I mean, I've never been in such a beautiful building for an AA meeting. When I got sober and those who joined me in more time than me and all that good stuff, we had to go down those stairs, and some of you go downstairs too, but we used to have to go down the stairs, come in the back door, there was like a little sign, and there was nobody there standing out front. I had a fan club, and you guys didn't even know who I was when I walked in. I just kept going right, left, and they kept just moving me right along the line. I got through that, and I was like, this is a great day. I got to come here every day and just get a little sample of that before I go out into the real world. Woo! It was hot. That's what recovery is about. That's what this book talks about. That's what has separated me from what I used to be like. I never had that. I was afraid. Selfish is an understatement. But fear was humongous. My name is Rogan Michael O'Donnell. When they say we're just supposed to be ordinary, not extraordinary, try that one on for your name, okay? Anybody else in here named Rogan? Because I didn't meet you, and I'd love to. I've never met another one. And I'm 39 years old, okay? No takers. Okay, let's move on. So I already thought of myself whacked out right off the top, Rogan. And I'd have to explain my name. People called me all kinds of wonderful names, and I had to correct them sometimes. That was okay by me. It was more attention, right? And it helped that fear of what you thought about me slip away. But somewhere along the line, now, I'm going to try this on for a little bit here. I grew up in Bangor, Maine. That's B-A-N-G-O-R. And yeah, and we talk this way, a little bit funny from you Manhattaners, okay? But Manhattan and I have something in common. See, when I was like 5, 6 years old, I learned about Manhattan through those red little cherries that sat in the bottom of the Manhattan that I got to have. That made my gums got numb, my tongue got tingly, my teeth felt weird. And all of a sudden, something magical happened. Everything was okay. The fear, whew, gone, went away. Now, I'm a little dude, right? And I'm eating cherries. Now, I know that, you know, no human power can cure or help me recover from alcoholism, right? Right. I could make you an alcoholic, though, because I wanted more of those cherries. So I kept running back when you were drinking. These are family members, and getting you more of that brown colored stuff that did this magic so I could have that cherry. And by the time I was done running back and forth, you definitely had too many drinks. So I was doing a good job. So it started off with that tingly sensation, that, ooh, you know, where all of a sudden the extraordinary feeling became a normal feeling. And then it progressed on, where somewhere down the line, I'd had my first drinking experience on my own with more family members, but I got the spins and I had to be put to bed. And the next thing you know, I woke up the next day and I had this really killing headache. And I learned that, I think it was at the age of 10, that was a hangover. Okay, but I felt great. I felt like I belonged with everybody else in the room. See, now, I know that I'm different from those that can and I who can't, because it even, I mean, this is going to sound kind of weird, but I wanted to drink coffee really bad as a little kid, and the adults were drinking coffee, and I tried the coffee without knowing the rules about coffee, and I burned my tongue really bad, and I never tried coffee again. So I knew that that was okay. But with this stuff, this magical elixir of life for me, it continued to grow and grow and grow until all of a sudden I'd gotten kicked out of a couple of schools. We are in a church, and I did go to a school that had something to do with a church, and I didn't get to go there anymore because of these wonderful behaviors that were exhibited through my constant drinking. And my constant drinking escalated from seventh grade on like a manhunt. Yeah, seventh grade. I flew in from Bangor, Maine, and landed in this little town called Westfield. These wonderful ladies met me at the door, all excited to go to a pool party and play, and I was like, let's go. And that night, we met to play Manhunt and started passing the bottle around, and that was the beginning of a vicious cycle that just kept spiraling out of control. Out of control. And that's a key word, see, because I thought I could control it. Now, for me, I have family members in recovery. Aunts and uncles who are called AA aunts and uncles, right? But then I also have real blood family members who are in recovery. And they would see me and they would know what was going on and they could get an idea of what was happening. And they would drop literature, they'd leave it in pants pockets, under my bed, under my pillow, in my drawers. And I'd come along this stuff and I would get these little mustard seeds planted. But again, I was never going to be like you. Because you were like some of my family members that were really whacked out. And I wasn't that whacked out. Again, I thought I had that control. But then there's that invisible line that happens where we get separated for real, and all of you in here that can identify yourself like this, where that moderate drinker that I was talking about turned into that hard drinker that I was talking about, that all of a sudden, visible line happened, and I crossed. And it became a need to fulfill that fear. Because I was running on empty. Now, again, I didn't know inside that I was running on empty. Beautiful people like you showed me that way. But I knew that I was really desperate. Because those patterns of the drinking kept going and going and going, and the trouble just kept happening and happening and happening. And I kept running and manipulating and lying and cheating and stealing and doing all the wonderful things that we do. And that phenomenon of craving, I mean, I tried everything and 10 times more, just like you all did, to try to work this thing out so that I wasn't going to be here. I didn't want to be here. I knew what here was all about, and I was terrified of here. I tried this like the Three Little Pigs story. I first came into AA, and I built my house out of the straw. I came in and told you, blah, and you were like, okay, let's get going. And I took some of the things that you were talking about, and I applied them, again, my way. Hey, there's the crux of the problem right there. My way. And, of course, Rogan, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, Big Bad Wolf came along and blew that all apart. Phenomenon of craving occurred. I got that idea. Well, you know, I'll just have one scotch and a Newport and things will be okay. No, things weren't okay. I don't remember the rest of it. So I came back to people like you because, again, the trouble brewed up like that tornado. And when I came back this time, I was a better little pig. I built out of sticks. I did 90 days. I got my pin. I'm the magic center dot in between here and here. And you do this and that, three sides of the triangle, you're going to be okay. And you guys were smiling and laughing. And I was like, you bet I'm going to. And then all of a sudden, we all know what happened. It's not a big mystery. I didn't have an honest desire. That's it. I just wanted you to get off my back. I wanted you to leave me alone. I wanted the voices to calm down for a moment, if you would. And then all of a sudden, this was God's grace. And please hear this, because this is true. The language of the heart. I didn't do this. I have nothing to do with my recovery. I showed up at Franklin Pierce College with telling you people my story of how I've been sober for like a year and change and my anniversary is coming up. Because, see, God knew how to communicate to a drunk like me. He knew where to meet me. And he met me through having some other guys there who were doing my freshman orientation who would say little things like, okay, everybody, easy does it. Let's get in a line. And I'm like, easy does it. Okay. All right, everybody, first things first, we're going to go like this. And then, of course, I had 50 million questions and so did every other freshman. And look, today's day one day at a time. We're going to get there. And I'm like, this guy knows Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, again, I reached out and said, are you a friend of Bill's? By the way, I am. Whoa. Me too. I've been sober forever. Blah, 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 right? Now, here's the magic thoughts. My mother had communicated with the school and said, listen, I'm sending my son up there. Do you have a 12-step program going on? Because he really needs it. Okay? Unbeknownst to me. And I went to that school because they knew nobody. And I was free to go do what I wanted to do, right? Again, my mind at play. And I get there and I meet this guy. And all of a sudden, he's coming over to the dorm room. And I happen to be holding a Heineken and going, it's my roommates. Putting it down. Or he happens to be walking in and I'm doing the American standard, holding on to the porcelain god, saying, I'll never do this again. And he's going, what happened? Oh, it's a stomach flu. Right. You know? But then again, it kept coming and coming and coming. And what kept coming was God was right there. I just didn't know it. And what God's grace was for me was that all of a sudden I had that last big bender. Took me out on a 3-week blackout. I don't know really what went on. I can tell you this. I sat with my sponsor a few years ago at his kitchen table, and he had me do a drink and drug log. And in the drink and drug log, he told me he wanted bullets and that I had to go back and get crystal clear on what was going on. Because, see, a guy like me, even though you think I sound really great and I'm looking all spiffy and spectacular, I rested on my laurels for some point in time. And I didn't sit at a table, and I hadn't gone through this work for like a decade. Yeah, that's not so good. We're going to get to that. But I do know, by going through those bullets, that I actually had called my old alma mater and asked about, hey, what was like my absentee record? And they were very clear to let me know that I was missing for about 3 weeks. And I was really shocked. I thought it was a couple of days. That's what it had gotten to. Oh, yeah, you know, like I had this thing a couple of days. It was fuzzy, whatever. Anyways, after that bout, people guided me and told me, listen, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, oh. Was it Tuesday night? Okay, thank you. It's Tuesday night. I went to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I prepared to tell you my story of blah, blah, blah. And what came out of my mouth was, I'm sick. I'm suffering. I need help. I think I'm going to die. I'm going crazy. What do I do? Now, I'd like to tell you that that was exactly what I said, but it was like, blah, 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 and all this other good stuff. And now, we were like, I don't know how many people are in here, but the room that I was in New Hampshire was like six. And five of them went before, and then they said, what about you? You want to talk about a spotlight? And what came out of my mouth was honesty and truth. Honesty and truth, for the first time. I didn't want to be that guy anymore. I was tired of running. I was fed up with my life. And I had had a spiritual awakening that they talk about. The night prior to that, I stood in the mirror and I saw this weird thing happen where I looked at me and me looked at me and me didn't like what it saw. And it said, what are you doing? You know better. Mustard seeds started growing and popping and things started happening. And I didn't argue with that voice. I shut up and listened. And I showed up. So I thank people like you for my life. Because you guys are what gave it to me. See, you took me by the hand and walked me through 12 simple steps. Now, my home group's got a really cool name. We meet on Sunday night at 7 o'clock in Wall, New Jersey. And we're called the Design for Living. And for a guy like me, that's what I needed at the age of 19. I never had a legal drink. Sorry. Didn't happen to this guy. It's not part of my story. Never. Never got to go up and be like, I'll have one of those stuff. Heck, when the commercials came out after a while, I didn't even know what they were talking about. And I really didn't care anymore, which was really cool. It had been removed, which was awesome. So, truth happened. Somebody had told me not to lie. I'm trying to mark up that word that gentleman asked me to say, speak the truth. So that's that. I'm trying to convey the simple basic message to those cats who came in here counting days. If you have, as it says, an honest desire, welcome. You do not, as of tonight, have to do anything that you've been doing like you did in the past. And if you're a cat like me, like the three little pigs, which we're getting to the third pig who built that beautiful cement, mortar, sand, I think we know those words, keystone, cornerstone, foundation. I came in here saying, you show me, instead of me showing or telling you. And you broke it down. You broke it down real simple. You told me about an allergy. You told me about a disease. You told me about the phenomenon of craving. You made sense to me about what was ailing me right off in the beginning, the physical part. But then you took your time and your patience because I was kind of fried. And you spoke to me about this thinking thing. And I didn't quite get it for a little while. I kind of wrestled around thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. But you showed me how I'm supposed to take a little water, a little sand, put it together, make some mortar, and all of a sudden stuff started to stack up. Then the next part's the most amazing part of all. I took the leap of faith and believed. The decision followed. Rigorous action started to take place, and I seeked out and did an inventory as it's so-called calls for. Simple directions in here, guys. Real simple. We all know that, right? And if you don't, this group, man, sponsor chair, whoa. What? Okay, meet them because they got it going on. They're going to show you the directions. And through there, you know, action and more action. I sat down with somebody, and I cannot tell you I puked my guts out, but I can tell you that the mirror got turned on to me for the first time, and that I was opened to see how whacked out I really am, you know? From there, those list of shortcomings and character defects, I don't understand why 6 and 7 are so small because, well, you know what? This is what's been pointed out to me, and I kind of agree. You know, in the beginning, I got 1, 2, and 3 to try to, you know, get with the physical, mental, and spiritual side. So that starts to happen, and 4, I get to write it down, and 5, I get to lay it out there and see more, and then 6 and 7 come right off the page, right? And then I keep on going to 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, right? But 6 and 7, right in the middle of it all, right? I've got the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 that get me right-sided so that I'm able to be open-minded to see 6 and 7. And then I continue to put action and action and more action. And I got 10 and 11 and 12 to keep 6 and 7 balanced. I think I said that right. I don't know. I didn't practice. But I practiced that. See, when I told you that the design for living, the AA way of life, that is in all my affairs. See, there's a beautiful, powerful message in this book. My children, my daughter's 15, my son is 6, and my other little guy is 4, have never seen me take a drink or anything else. When guys come over to my house and they're carrying this, they say, are you here to do big book work with my dad? Yes, I am. Okay, you have to go into the dining room. They know the deal. They know the deal. I mean, how awesome is that? When me and a bunch of guys get together and we go out to like Founders Day or a retreat or another wonderful kind of a convention going on, and we all show up at my house, my little guys know what's happening. Tonight, they know, Daddy, are you going to a meeting tonight? Yes, I am. What kind of meeting will you be going to tonight? This is the 6-year-old who is so inquisitive, it's not even funny. I said, well, tonight I'm going to be speaking to a lot of other people like Daddy. Is your sponsor going to be there? My wife has brainwashed my kid. Because my kid will come up to me if I'm a little off-tempered or something and say, you know what mommy says, call Jimmy. I'm not lying. I'm so not lying. I get busted left and right. 19 years of sobriety, come on, you know, don't I get a little slack? No way. See, now we're going to come back because I'm getting close to my time, and I want to talk about the untreated part. See, this untreated part, my sponsor, I met this guy in Princeton on a Saturday night meeting, or morning, sorry, 10 o'clock. And he got up there and he spoke to an audience your size, a little bit. And what he said was, he like eyeballed me out of the room. I'm exaggerating again. He was talking in the meeting, right? But I thought he was talking to me. And what he said was that if there are people in this room, single digits, double digits, big time digits, and they got a little black hole going on inside them called restless, irritable, and discontent. That's untreated alcoholism. Let me tell you what, friends. There was a resentment right there. We had an issue. And I was raised old school way back in the day before I got lazy. So I showed up and shook his hand and said, thank you very much, and where's your home group, and what's going on, and blah, 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 because I was left with a lump in the throat and an aching belly. And my mind was just like on fire. No fire hose big enough could put that fire out. I was really freaked out. And I showed up to that home group, that's now my home group, but his home group on that Sunday night, and I told my sponsor who was with me that that guy's going to be my sponsor whether he likes it or not. And I went there, and I walked in. I'm not expecting them to remember me. And like instantaneous, God, again, doing for me what I could not do for myself, okay? Just like in the beginning. This is how it's always been going. Bam! Hey, I'm glad you came. Hey, I got something for you. Hey! And took me aside, and we started talking, and I said, are you sponsoring people? And he gave me this look. And I felt like that little kid all over again, shaking in my boots, like this guy was seeing the truth, seeing right through me. Anybody identify with being seen? Scary feeling, being seen. He still does it today. So anyways, pow, I asked him, I need help. And he said with some really fresh, wonderful language, you bet you do. I was told not to use that kind of language. So anyways, whammo, here's my number. Give me a call. Show up. Bring this. Bam, do that. I did all that. And all of a sudden, we peeled the onion. We opened up. I opened up. It says somewhere in our wonderful book, whom? Willing, honest, open-mindedness. I was shown again. And I've become awake. I'm on fire. This was a few years ago. I can't tell you what's been going on, except for the simple things that I've been sharing with you already. That these 12 spiritual principles work. You're all living proof. Just look around. And so am I. And that's the grace of God. And you know, I heard this real old timer say one day, and it was really, I got caught up in like time, you know, big numbers, right? And I realize that those big numbers don't mean anything if those big numbers have just been sitting around collecting dust. It's not an insult. And because I was doing that with some big number. And I realized that I needed more. Because, see, if this program doesn't give me the ease and comfort that I used to get once upon a time, then that restless, irritable, and discontent is going to come right on up. That sneaking, cunning, baffling, powerful is going to pull me right down. And so I realized that once upon a time I used to think it was all out there, but really it starts within here. And I let it out through these 12 spiritual principles, through this way of life. And this way of life has given me a life that I could never imagine. I could go on for hours and bore you to death, and as my sponsor would say, my ears hurt, you've given me a headache, stop, please. But it is absolutely beautiful and mind-boggling. I have great friends here who have come to support me. My mom and dad are here to support me. Yeah, isn't that cool? Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. I like that too. Yeah. Once upon a time, I was the kid that would come home and say, I don't know what happened to your car. I know it's brand new, but it's gone. I checked the parking lot. Whoops. Can I have some money to pay the cab? That's a true story. along with many more. I really, really, and truly want to thank you. I want to thank you for the opportunity, Jeff. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come to your group. Again, if you're ever in Wall, New Jersey, on a Sunday night down by the Jersey Shore, we have a big book study meeting. It's called A Design for Living. It's the way we all here practice our life. I've seen the three sides of the triangle working in this room tonight, and it gets me all amped up. And I hope I've carried my experience and strength and hope to you, and that you've gotten a taste of what it's like to be walking in my shoes, because I just show up now. I really don't do too much of anything except get guided, and it all just gets laid out in front of me. Am I there? Oh, wow. Oh, I got a couple extra seconds. So I leave you with this one simple thought. If you don't know how to meditate, ask somebody who does. If you don't know how to pray, ask somebody who does. If you don't get the G-O-D thing or the spiritual, intellectual beings of some sort, ask somebody who you see it in their eyes that does. We do not have to be dead in AA. That's not what this was all about. We are to be awakened. We are supposed to be rocketed. We are supposed to know a new sense of freedom, happiness. Those bedevilments that they talk about, bye-bye. That's not supposed to be that way. I'm glad to tell you that, you know, when you guys built the house that I got surrounded in, even though I've had my troubles in 6 and 7 and through the life of recovery, I've maintained one crucial, simple part. You never gave up on me. Notice how I maintained that. I hope you heard me. I maintained. You never gave up on me. And that is what we are all about. Thank you very much for a wonderful evening.